Hey, y'all, it's Lark
and Kim
from Kudzu Killers, Homicide and Sweet Tea, and we're pleased to announce our brand new show, Two Chicks and a Crucifix.
We're going to have a good time yakking about paranormal phenomena like ghosts
and monsters and conspiracy theories
and Bigfoot.
Bigfoot.
You know I'm partial to Bigfoot.
Right. Anyway, we hope you come listen to our new paranormal show and have some fun
in 2021. See, I'm a poet and I didn't know it.
Stop it.
You'll be the ghostest with the mostest.
Cut it out.
We love parapsychology and cryptozoology.
Welcome back to Kudzu Killers, Homicide and Sweet Tea. Kim and I are really happy to see y'all again, and I hope that maybe y'all have checked us out over on our new fun sister site. What's it called, Kim?
Two Chicks and a Crucifix.
Two Chicks and a Crucifix. Hey. Anyway, we're on our second week into that, so there's already four episodes for you guys to jump into, get your feet kind of wet, laugh a little bit with us. But for today, I have a story that I've seen a whole lot all over the place. And I thought, well, you know what? If I keep seeing it everywhere, it must be a sign. Before y'all all start to scream at me about blaming the victim, and I'm not a victim blamer, Kim and I aren't, I have to say I have a lot of sympathy for her daughter and what happened in this situation. And of course, the lady we're going to talk about did not deserve to die, but she was not a well or kind person. She really tortured her little girl all for the sake of attention and money. I'm not sure which was her initial motivation, but ultimately, I think they pretty much went hand in hand. So this is the story of Dee Dee Blanchard and her daughter, Gypsy Rose. Dee Dee Blanchard was born Claudine Petrie in Chack Bay, Louisiana, near the Gulf Coast in 1967. During her childhood, relatives recalled she occasionally engaged in petty theft, often as a form of retaliation when things didn't go her way. At some point early in her adult life, she worked as a nurse's aide, where she quickly learned about drugs and their uses, which comes in a minute. Her family later expressed suspicion that in 1997, she might have killed her own mother by denying her food.
Oh, that's evil.
Keep in mind, this lady's the victim. She is the one that was murdered. So when she was 24, she became pregnant by Rod Blanchard, and he was only 17. Now, she'd been a beauty queen, and she just really had a lot of attention. She was used to a lot of attention, and suddenly she's pregnant. So he does the right thing, and he marries her. But that doesn't really work out because, well, hey, he's 17 and scared to death. Yeah.
She's basically a pedophile, let's put it that way. You know,
true.
17, underage.
True, true. Gypsy Rose was born shortly after her parents separated on July the 27th in 1991. Rod, her dad, said that Dee Dee liked the name Gypsy, and he was a Guns N' Roses fan. And as far as Rod recalls, neither of them knew anything about Gypsy Rose Lee. I know you do, don't you, Kim?
Yes,
yeah,
I do.
So we're going to tell everybody else. Just Gypsy Rose Lee was a 1920s vaudeville child star turned stripper, whose early life was the basis for the Broadway musical Gypsy. Now, I'm not really positive, but wasn't Shirley MacLaine the one that played Gypsy, or did she play Mama? Either way.
I don't know. I want to say the movie I saw was Natalie Wood that played Gypsy. But, I don't know.
Well, anyway, it was a musical, and it was pretty popular, and it was done quite a while ago. But anyway, the similarities are kind of uncanny. So,
well, she had a really evil, kind of pushy stage mother.
Well, exactly. You know, that's what I was immediately seeing this all over the place when I first started reading about this. So if y'all haven't seen this movie, check it out. We're not going to go on about it anymore because anyway, but that particular gypsy had a controlling stage mother too, like Kim said, and she lied about her daughter's age to make her seem younger. She kept forcing her daughter to perform even though she didn't want to. And also, she maintained separate birth certificates that she would use whenever it was advantageous for her to do so, just like Dee Dee did with her own daughter. So the similarities are kind of crazy. Anyway, so that, I have to say, that's the first thing I thought of when I heard about her name, and I mean her name and the situation and everything, and how manipulative her mom was to gain the sympathy and the money and the attention. So anyway, back to our own story. Meanwhile, when Gypsy was 7 or 8, she recalls riding on her grandfather's motorcycle, and they were involved in a minor accident, nothing big, and she suffered an abrasion on her knee. I think maybe he just dumped the bike over, you know what I mean? You got to get hurt a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, her mother said that there were such visible signs of injuries that would require several surgeries to treat her properly. And do you know that from then on, Gypsy, who was already being made to use a walker, was confined to a wheelchair?
So insurance fraud was her game?
No, she didn't have any insurance. That wasn't her deal. Her deal was more, even more
sympathy,
schemey, and maniacal, really. And the little girl, the baby, was old enough to walk on her own, healthy enough. She was perfectly healthy to walk on her own. Now, Dee Dee starts. She's convinced Rob that the kid, you know, there's something wrong with her. So the two of them start to take her to the Special Olympics, those different events.
Yeah.
In 2001, when Dee Dee claimed Gypsy was 8, she claimed she was 8. She was actually 10. Y'all keep up with me now because, yeah, it gets a little weird. In 2001, at the age of 8, real age 10, she was named the honorary queen of the crew of Mid-City.
Okay.
I know, but get this. It's a child-oriented parade held during Mardi Gras in New Orleans. And so, oh my God, Kim, you know, the attention begins, right? I mean,
of course,
queen of a Mardi Gras crew. Girl, it didn't get much better than that. If you're from Louisiana, hey, for me, if I could do that, that would be the ultimate. So she sees, oh my God, here I am. I'm back on the spotlight, you know, like she'd been the beauty queen before in Louisiana. So she starts to push the envelope. So she stopped Gypsy going to school after the second grade and possibly even as early as kindergarten. She started a homeschooler, supposedly because her illnesses were so severe. Gypsy managed to learn to read on her own through the Harry Potter books. I think that's,
that's
impressive.
It is.
I mean, it's impressive, you know? I can't imagine. Yes. So at this point, in 2001, Dee Dee moved in with her father and stepmother. Now, there wasn't much love lost between those folks. And they
Wait. Dee Dee moved in with her father and stepfather, or Gypsy moved in with her father and stepfather? A stepmother.
Dee Dee drags Gypsy back to her parents' house and moves in with her father and stepmother.
With Dee Dee's father and stepmother.
Correct. Now, there was never really any love lost between her and her father. Apparently, by all accounts, he was a good man, but she claimed all kinds of ugly stuff about him.
Of course she did.
Yeah, just
attention.
Well, just like she does later, you know, to her poor ex-husband. So the family, the father and stepmother, would later claim that Dee Dee was preparing food for her stepmother, and she poisoned it with Roundup weed killer. Now, the stepmom got chronically ill and stayed sick the whole time that Dee Dee and Gypsy were living with them.
Of course she did. That's craziness.
And during that time that she was living with them, she was arrested for several minor offenses, including writing bad checks. Remember, whenever she didn't get her way, she went off and stole something. But girl, she was just getting warmed up.
Oh, boy.
So I want to take a really quick break right here, and then we will come back with all this crazy stuff that she did to this little girl to get attention from herself. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Jules from Riddle Me That True Crime.
I'm Robin Warder from The Trail Went Cold, and Jules and I want to tell you a little bit about a case that means a great deal to us. The death of 9-month-old baby Jacob Landine on April the 10th, 1987, in Socorro, New Mexico.
The day prior to his death, on April 9th, baby Jacob was being watched by his mother Brenda's new boyfriend, John, not his real name, in his mobile home on 1453 Fatima Drive. While John was babysitting Jacob, Jacob would incur what would be his second head injury in a period of weeks. The prior head injury was a subdural hematoma, or brain bleed, and it was serious enough that it needed to be lanced to take pressure off baby Jacob's brain while being monitored by doctors over the course of several days.
The circumstances surrounding how Jacob was injured and subsequently died are murky at best, with the suspect giving multiple versions of the events of the day, ranging from Jacob choking and accidentally hitting his head while trying to dislodge a cookie, to Jacob falling and John returning to see the injured infant.
The suspect also reportedly confessed to officers that he was indeed responsible, but there is no paper or audio record of this confession in the police file. The reasons given by the DA for not pursuing the case are confusing as well, with one of the reasons being that they were worried that John would file charges against the state.
It was the opinion of the doctors that baby Jacob was struck in the head and this was no accident. In the years to follow, John goes on to sexually abuse young Eric, as well as physically abusing his mother Brenda and emotionally abusing and isolating them both, making their world very small.
During the autopsy, layers of abuse seem to be present. A healing rib fracture from around the time of the first head injury is also discovered. It's impossible to say exactly when the injury took place, but what is clear is that someone was abusing young Jacob, and that person was most likely John.
Eric Landine, Jacob's brother, has been fighting to get justice for him. However, he faces some obstacles, such as the statute of limitations of 6 years on second-degree murder that State Representative Bill Rehm has petitioned to have overturned.
Join Robin and I, as well as criminologist Dr. Ashley Wellman, an investigative expert, a legal expert, a forensic psychiatrist, as well as Jacob's brother Eric, as we explore all angles of this case and try to bring awareness, understanding, and hopefully, ultimately, justice for Jacob.
The series starts on March the 1st. Tune in on your favorite podcast app.
So welcome back, y'all. Remember, meanwhile, Dee Dee and Gypsy are with Dee Dee's dad, the Petries. Now, when Dee Dee's dad and stepmom begin to regularly confront her about her treatment of Gypsy and expressed suspicion about her role in her stepmother's health, she left with Gypsy for Slidell, Louisiana, which is kind of catty-cornered to New Orleans. She just wasn't having anybody tell her what to do. So she picks up her toys and her money ticket and heads on down the road. Well, of course, her stepmother's health returned to normal.
Of course it did.
Go figure, right? Dee Dee claimed her daughter had sleep apnea, suffered from leukemia, muscular dystrophy, and said she required a wheelchair and feeding tube.
Oh, jeez. So she's torturing this little girl.
Oh. Well, right now she's only claiming it, but she's claiming it to the point where the doctors are making it real. Ugh. So supposedly she had seizures, asthma, hearing and visual impairments. And due to Dee Dee's actions, Gypsy was prescribed tons of medications. She used a breathing machine to sleep and she went through multiple surgeries. She had multiple gastrointestinal operations and even a feeding tube.
Ugh, that's horrible.
Which Gypsy later states she never needed, that she could always eat. Now keep this in mind for a little bit later because it just gets so much worse. In 2005, that was when, y'all may or may not remember, but Hurricane Katrina hit Slidell. It also hit New Orleans, but Slidell is right there, kind of on the border. Now, the power was off for weeks, and for the most part, Dee Dee and Gypsy always lived in government housing and kind of hand-to-mouth-ish. So their power was off for weeks. So mother and daughter turn up in a special needs shelter in Covington, Louisiana. Now, she told the shelter staff she didn't have Gypsy's medical records with her because they'd been destroyed in the flood and hurricane. Now, that makes sense.
Of course they had, yeah.
But this was a convenient truth now, wasn't it? Because she started to use this to spin bigger lies down the road. And one of the doctors in the shelter, Dr. Janet Jordan, happened to be from the Ozarks. And she was really charmed by Gypsy while they were in the shelter. who, by all accounts, and from what I saw and what I heard on some interviews with her and whatnot, she really was a sweet, kind of loving and really sincere little girl. I mean, it's heartbreaking, right?
Mm-hmm.
So no one realized until later that she was actually terrified of her mother. And it was Jordan who suggested the Blanchards move to Missouri. It was also Jordan who told a local news station in 2005 about the story of a mother and disabled daughter left without anything. Well, you know, this pretty much proved irresistible to the local press, even on top of the whole Katrina business. And it also worked on the charities, too, to the point where Dee Dee and Gypsy were airlifted to Missouri in September of 2005, where they rented a house in Aurora. And during their time there, Gypsy was honored by the Olay Foundation, which advocates for the rights of feeding tube recipients as its 2007 Child of the Year.
Oh, geez. That was just icing on the cake for her mama.
Mm-hmm. That's despicable, though, because think of all the children that really actually
needed
this
help. Who actually
needed
it. Yeah, exactly.
So the outpouring of support just continued, and including a great deal of charitable contributions. In Louisiana, they often stayed at the Ronald McDonald houses during medical appointments. And for those of you guys who don't know this, internationally, Ronald McDonald houses put people up when you come to their city for help. So this is what was going on in Louisiana. I think they were just bouncing from Ronald McDonald House for her appointments. Now, in Missouri, they received free flights to see doctors at Children's Mercy Hospital in Kansas City, free trips to Walt Disney World, backstage passes to Miranda Lambert and Blake Shelton concerts, where she was frequently photographed with the singers via the Make-A-Wish Foundation, more mm-hmm. money that's not rightfully theirs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, oh man, the attention. Oh my God, yes. Right? Now, here's even more that just gets me. In 2008, Habitat for Humanity built them a small home with a wheelchair ramp and a hot tub. Mm-mm-mm. A hot tub. Who gets a hot tub from Habitat for Humanity, right?
She probably spun something that the little girl needed it for her physical therapy or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Not to mention that usually with Habitat for Humanity, you have to...
sweat equity.
Yeah, a certain mm-hmm. amount of what they call sweat equity, which means you got to swing a hammer and be out there. Mm-hmm. And if you mm-hmm. see this lady, you know she's never done anything physical in her life. So as soon as their Habitat for Humanity home was built, it was actually a part of a larger project in Springfield, Missouri. As soon as it was finished, they moved their happy selves in and they painted it pink. So it was this beautiful little pink cottage, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Happy, happy pink. In the meantime, Dee Dee continued to trash poor Ron, Gypsy's daddy, to all of Gypsy's doctors and anybody who would listen, saying he was a drug addict, an alcoholic, he'd abandoned them. And all the while, poor Ron was still sending his $1,200 a month
wow.
in child support and any toys she might want, like TV sets or Nintendos or anything she wanted, right?
Wow. Yeah.
But anytime he wanted to see his daughter or make arrangements, she would sidestep or cancel at the last minute, or she would have to be there.
Why didn't he take her to court?
Well, I think he was a little, even when this all came down and shook out, he was still very forgiving and trusting again. So on Gypsy's real 18th birthday, he tried to call her and he was intercepted by Dee Dee to tell him she couldn't talk to him and that if she did get a hold of him, that she was not to tell him that, not to tell Gypsy that she was 18 because she thinks she's only 14 years old.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, all this has got to mess with that poor little girl's mind.
Well, of course it is. Of course it is.
You know, I mean, it's going to come out and it's going to feel crazy weird to her. So as Gypsy grew older and more aware of what it was kind of going on, what her mom was doing to her, and of course, her hormones, she's 18 now, no matter what the paperwork says.
Yeah, I have an 18-year-old and, you know.
Yeah.
There's a difference between 14 and 18, emotionally and mentally and everything else.
Well, all of it, you know, things, her body's changing, whether she likes it or not, whether mommy likes it or not. So anyway, she started to regularly defy her mother and try to escape her situation.
I don't blame her.
Yeah, but Dee Dee was pretty evil and she would resort to physical abuse to keep her compliant. She would deny her food. Remember, she starved her mama.
Mm-hmm.
And... Yep. even out of poor little Gypsy's mouth, even out of poor little Gypsy's mouth, I heard her say she chained her to the bed by her ankles. Now, Gypsy's growing up, and her mind and body are starting to think about boys at this age, because remember, she's 18. And
of course,
Dee Dee was still stacking up a pile of organizations where she could try to get help from. But, you know, she still had to be underage to get that. But don't worry now, she's got that covered, right? Because she's got fake birth certificates left and right. She's been changing Gypsy's date little by little for years. So since being Hurricane Katrina survivors, she claimed that birth certificates were lost. Well, that's a pretty easy way to go. Pretty good reason. Now, I'm thinking hospitals have those records. But you know,
Well, courthouses do and all that kind of stuff. You know, they've got all birth certificates on file.
Well, you know, that was a pretty crazy time. And if anything was there, who knows what had really been lost at that point. But in the hospitals, too, could have possibly lost all that. But it's just like, either way, it made it easy for her to lie. And people kept believing her. And after the murder, they found hidden under her bed a prescription pad that she'd stolen from the hospital. So she just kept writing prescriptions for whatever it is she wanted. And she had like a closet through all of this, all the medications and whatnot. It's like they said, the house inside, it was pink and everything, but outside, it was just a tip. It looked like she was a super duper filthy hoarder, but the closet with the medication was like pristine and organized.
Because that was what was really important.
Exactly. And I mean, she had a really elaborate scheme all worked out to convince the doctors to do all this unnecessary surgery. Investigation by 2020 showed that she'd been treated by at least 150 doctors.
Oh, geez.
But I'm sort of asking, you know, why doesn't one hand know what the other is doing or question any of this? I mean, this stuff just makes me so mad.
Well, it's probably, I had an aunt who was addicted to antidepressants and things like that. And she would just have five doctors in five different cities going at the same time.
Wow.
She would go to one and, you know, he was a great doctor as long as he'd give her prescriptions.
Well, exactly. Then, yeah.
You know, she'd go to the other ones. No lie. She had about five going all at the same time and they didn't know about each other, you know?
I mean, I know, you know, that's illegal. Everybody doesn't know it's illegal. If you get caught, it's illegal. But people do it because that's how they get. It's how they get these drugs. And so the one thing that all the doctors agreed on is that Gypsy never spoke. And she later explains that she was coached by her mom just to play with her doll or a stuffed animal that she'd bring in and don't speak. And that if she didn't talk or answer or anything, that she'd get a treat later. And every doctor's report said, quote, mother states, mother reported, history by mother, unquote. Gypsy says her mother would use like a very sweet southern charm of her personality to get what she wanted. Now, I know we're sweet and we're charming and everything, but, you know, there's no charmer like a psychopath.
This is the truth. Yeah, they are often very, very charming.
So she'd be friendly and get on the doctor's good side or play on their sympathy. And it always came down to the records were lost to Katrina. That was her excuse. So she was pretty much getting away with all of the stuff until she took her to see a doctor for muscular dystrophy and cerebral palsy. She took her to see a neurologist by the name of Dr. Bernardo Flasterstein.
Okay.
He's kind of our hero in a way, because he states that he saw a 14-year-old girl who did not exhibit any of the signs or disabilities that would display with these illnesses, with
good
muscular dystrophy or the cerebral palsy, right? Now, to him, this was a red flag. First of all, why was she there? You know, she didn't have any of these symptoms. But it got worse because Dee Dee was livid when he told her that Gypsy was not ill with these horrible diseases.
Yeah, instead of being joyful and everything, she was pissed off.
Exactly. I mean, who wouldn't want good news that your child didn't have this stuff?
Of course. Yeah.
So the next big thing was that made him even more suspicious was she left out of his office like in a storm, in a huge huff, yelling and screaming at the nurses and saying he didn't know what he was talking about and he was a fake and he was a fraud. Well, hello, it takes one to know one. But Dr. Flasterstein even wrote in his notes he felt this was a mother suffering from Munchausen by proxy. Now, Let me just explain what that is. Munchausen by proxy is when a caregiver will fabricate an illness or induce an illness in their child in order to get medical care, according to Dr. Jamie Kaufman, who is a board-certified child abuse pediatrician. Interesting specialty, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is actually considered abuse on the child.
Well, of course it is. I mean, you know, these people poison their kids to make them sick so they can go to the hospital and have all this attention for themselves as the poor, poor mama.
Right. Well,
has to take care of this child.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They do this, like you say, in order to obtain some sort of attention or secondary gain for themselves. And according to Dr. Kaufman, the most common is to receive emotional gain. You know, the money and stuff was just, I think that was just a little bit bonus. She was really more in it for the attention.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Kaufman also describes it as like an addict that needs a fix.
Mm-hmm.
There's never enough. You got to keep up in the game. So the bad thing here is Dr. Flasterstein did not call protective services, but eventually somebody else did. And social services came out several times and ultimately deemed everything was fine.
Of course they did.
I mean, the house was a pigsty. I saw pictures of it. It was absolutely a hoarder's haven. But still, she dodged a bullet and they closed the case. So according to Dr. Jamie Kaufman, again, Dee Dee was able to get away with this because this type of personality is very difficult to detect because they are pathological liars and extremely manipulative.
Of course.
And just like you said before, she also moved around from doctor to doctor, different hospitals and charitable institutions. So she was like playing a shell game big time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're wondering why Gypsy didn't stand up to her, she explains that she was so afraid of her and her consequences that her mother would strike her and beat her with coat hangers or open-handedly and punish her by not feeding her, like we said before, and even chaining her to the bed if she didn't obey her. Now, many people who met Gypsy were actually charmed by her. She was really tiny, and if you've ever heard her voice, she sounds like a teeny little girl. She sounds like she's about 5. It's kind of weird. She was tiny and more than likely her growth stunted by all the medication and the malnutrition. And she actually hit 5 foot tall. But when you saw her, she was nearly toothless and smiled
poor
a lot.
Thing.
Yeah, her teeth were horrible. Large glasses. And she kind of had that, again, that high childlike voice, which reinforced the perception that she had all these problems, her mother was saying, you know?
Right, yeah.
And guess what else her mama did? This is classic, I know. Her mother shaved her head.
Oh.
So she's constantly shaving her head to mimic the hairless appearance of a chemo patient.
Right, yeah.
So sympathy was just pouring out left and right, and Dee Dee was lapping it up, you know. So whenever they left the house in the wheelchair, Dee Dee often took an oxygen tank and feeding tube with them. And Gypsy was fed the children's liquid nutritional supplement Pediasure into her 20s.
Oh, man.
So the insane medical interventions continued. Dee Dee had some of Gypsy's saliva glands treated with Botox. Then she had them extracted altogether to control her drooling. Now, she claims...
Who did she have doing this stuff to her?
That's what I'm saying, Kim. This is what Gypsy says she did. Gypsy says her mother would induce the drooling by using topical anesthesia to numb her gums before she'd go to the doctor. Then she'd ask the doctors, what can you do to fix the saliva? Then they just kept going until she could, she would ride that pony until they're at the glue factory. I mean, that was just it. So the lack of saliva, this one just gets me. I know all this other stuff, but this is just, are you kidding me? So the lack of salivary glands coupled with side effects of the anti-seizure medication she was given, it caused her teeth to rot. And at some point, the majority of her teeth, including all her front teeth, had to be pulled and replaced. Now she has a bridge and she's actually really pretty now, but she also had tubes implanted in her ears to control a myriad of made-up ear infections. Holy
poor
moly.
Thing.
I know.
Well, why aren't these doctors checking to see if this is true? They're just taking the woman's word for it. They're not doing any testing or anything. What's the deal?
Well, they are doing as much testing as Well, they're doing the testing, right? But just like with the one doctor said, hey, nothing's wrong with her muscles. See, so she'd go to another doctor, and there's always somebody that's going to take your word for it. And like, she was a smooth talker. And some of this stuff, I mean, they can't really, I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I have no idea. But that gets me. That's my same question, Kim, is how did she fake this for so long?
That's just that's extreme child abuse to me.
Oh. But wait, there's more. So in 2011, so we're talking just recently, right?
Well, 9 years, 10 years ago.
Well, that's recent to me. I mean, you know, it's too recent. If you're in the 21st century and this stuff's happened, it's ridiculous. I can't even. But anyway, so in 2011, they apparently like to dress up and go to these different like sci-fi and Comic-Con and stuff like that. And again, they got a lot of attention, or it was a free ticket or whatever. So they went to this sci-fi convention and Gypsy tried to escape. Now, her mom caught her. At that point, she was over 18. So she could have legitimately gone, right? But because her mom's got all these fake birth certificates, she ponied one of them up to the police. And the police believed her, so Dee Dee took her back home. She takes her home, she busts up her computer, and she threatens to smash her fingers if she ever tries that again. And then she keeps Gypsy leashed and handcuffed to her bed for 2 weeks. On top of telling her that she had filed paperwork with the police claiming that she was mentally incompetent and no one would ever believe her. If she left.
I just don't know what to say. That's why I'm sitting here silently, because I just don't I can't imagine.
Well, I know. That's what I was saying to you before. I know y'all don't hate me for being on Gypsy's side, but you know, the mother was, who was the victim here? I don't know. For murder, for sure. But they were both victims, I suppose. So sometime around 2012, about a year later, Gypsy continued to use the internet even after her mother would go to bed. So she'd sneak out and use the internet, because that's what kids do. As you know.
Yes, I know that well.
I know. And by this, she met a boy by the name of Nicholas Godejohn on a Christian singles group. So it seems like he'd be all right. Mm-hmm. Now, he was around her age, but he was from Big Bend, Wisconsin, so he was not in her neighborhood. Godejohn had some issues of his own. He had a criminal record for indecent exposure and a history of mental illness. And
so you're going to walk from your crazy mom to a crazy boyfriend.
Well, okay. You know, I mean,
stick with what you know, I suppose.
I know. Better the devil you know, right? Anyway, it was also stated at times that he was either autistic or he had a dissociative identity disorder. So they struck up a relationship. Of course they did. And they both thinking they were madly in love. But we all know, this was lust. They were more madly in lust. So they actually meet up a couple of times and have sex. And, you know, they lose their minds to that. And eventually they conspire together to murder Dee Dee. Their little plan that they come up with, John shows up at the house and Dee Dee lets him in. She's sleeping. He creeps in. And he...
Wait. Dee Dee lets him in or Gypsy lets him in?
Gypsy lets John in the house. And he creeps in the house and Dee Dee is sleeping. He creeps into her bedroom while Gypsy hides in the bathroom. And he stabs her 4 or 5 times. It's not really clear. But Gypsy's hiding in the bathroom, covering her ears so that she won't have to hear her mama scream. And as soon as he's sure that she's good and dead, they hop over into Gypsy's room and have sex.
Mm-hmm.
They take $4,000 and they scram. Now, they're both not, you know, they're not very bright at this point. I don't know what Gypsy's IQ is. I believe John had a pretty low IQ. Gypsy had just been cloistered for so long that she didn't know any better. But they were seen everywhere on the security cameras. And Gypsy states that it never occurred to her that they might be caught.
Okay.
She thought they'd never be caught. And you know,
that's a naive kind of kiddish. Yeah. Well, she's been treated like a kid her whole life and years younger than she is. So she didn't know.
She's been locked away. So that's just the naivete on her part. With him, I think he had the low IQ. I want to say it was like 70 or something like that, but I could be wrong. So they decided they'd mail the murder weapon back to his house in Wisconsin to avoid getting caught with it. And then they got on a bus and took the bus to his home in Wisconsin. So anyway, yeah. So on the way, several witnesses saw the pair on their way to the Greyhound station and noticed that Gypsy wore a blonde wig and was walking unassisted, right?
Mm-hmm.
So days later, they posted to Gypsy and Dee's shared Facebook, quote, "The bitch is dead," followed by a long post saying the unnamed poster had murdered Dee Dee and raped Gypsy. They were trying to throw everybody kind of off the scent. Yeah. But also, according to Gypsy, those messages were intended to provoke somebody to go to the house to investigate. Since her mother's body had been lying unrecovered for several days, though police initially feared the worst for Gypsy, a neighbor who knew about her relationship with John told them, and the IP address belonging to his phone was linked to the post on Facebook. Talk about not covering your tracks. So they were both arrested, of course. And at their individual trials, after the discovery of how Dee Dee had treated Gypsy all those years, sympathy for her as the victim of a violent murder rapidly shifted to her daughter as a longtime victim of child abuse.
Mm-hmm. As it should, in my opinion.
I agree. I totally agree. While the charge of first-degree murder can carry the death penalty under Missouri law, or life without parole, County Prosecutor Dan Patterson soon announced he would not seek it for either Gypsy or Go to John, calling the case extraordinary and unusual. Well, no doubt.
Yeah, exactly.
Listen to this. Gypsy was so undernourished that during the year she was in the county jail, she gained 14 pounds.
I don't doubt it.
In contrast to most who lose weight in that situation.
Getting regular meals.
Oh, well, hello, yeah.
That's not liquid directly into her gut. So,
Oh, my goodness. So it was all a fraud. She told the police all of it, every last bit of it. Her mother had made her do it all.
Mm-hmm.
In July 2015, she accepted the plea bargain agreement of second degree murder and was sentenced to 10 years in prison.
Okay.
Go to John still faced the more severe charge because prosecutors contended that he initiated the murder plot. And both he and Gypsy agreed that he was the one who actually killed Dee Dee. Well, yes, he did.
Yeah, he did. I'm doubting he did all the planning, but yeah.
No, I think it was, yeah. She was pretty much, yeah, the mastermind. In February of 2019, he was sentenced to life in prison for the murder conviction. The only possible option since prosecutors had declined to seek the death penalty. Go to John asked Judge David Jones for leniency on the armed criminal action charge, which carries a minimum sentence of only 3 years, saying that he had fallen, quote, blindly in love with Gypsy.
Mm-hmm.
He received a sentence of 25 years on that charge, which is concurrent with the life sentence. Now, I feel for this poor girl.
Yeah, I feel for the girl. Now, he, on the other hand, didn't have to go stab her mother to death. But I feel for her for feeling like that was her only way out because she tried to get out before and the police just handed her back over.
You know what? I believe that's what she really believed. And she says she's sorry that her mom is dead. And I get that she's legitimately sorry she's dead. But, you know, it's kind of like, it's you or me, man.
Well, that was her only, it seems like that was her only way out.
I agree. Yeah. Because
really,
what was going to happen? Because the older she got, something was going to have to happen. Something was going to have to explode. And Gypsy herself says she actually feels free now that she's in prison.
Well,
that
if of course she does.
Yeah. If she had to make a choice between her mom or prison, that she would choose prison.
I mean, like you said at the beginning, I am usually the last person that will have anything to say to blame the victim of a murder.
Of course.
I think, however, in this instance, she had it coming.
Well, she built this house of cards. And, you know, this brings us back to the whole, we say this every time, the whole nature versus nurture. Every time there's a, you know, this sweet child was born healthy. She was tormented by her mother. I mean, think of these guys. We got Ed Kemper. We got Ed Gein, right?
Mm-hmm.
She was tormented by her mom to the point where she had no choice how to escape, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically my story. But there's one little FYI here. Her family her entire family in Louisiana, the ones who had confronted her about her treatment of Gypsy, you know, years before, none of them regretted that she was dead. Her father, her stepmother, and the nephew.
Well, no, because they knew she was a horrible person.
Well, you're going to love this. She said,
It's just like that bully that I talked about recently, where the whole town up in Missouri killed him, and nobody will talk about it because he was such a horrible person.
Well, the family said that, you know, Dee Dee deserved her fate as much as Gypsy had been punished. Dee Dee deserved this, and nobody would pay for her funeral or even pick up her ashes. And guess what? In the end, her father and stepmother flushed them down the toilet.
Well, she tried to kill her stepmother.
I'm loving it. I'm thinking. You know, I think there's not a better way.
She's in the sewer where she deserved to be.
I know it.
And I know I'm sure we're going to get some backlash and some feedback about this, but.
Well, you know, I'm sorry if I stir y'all up a little bit, but this stirs me up. So that's why if I look for a story, I want a story that stirs me up. So I figured it'll stir y'all up in one way or the other, and we'll have something to talk about. So with all that said, that's my story for today. And I saw a picture of her. She's in jail. She's a pretty little girl. And I hope she can be normal when she gets out. So, you know.
All right. Well, be sure to tune in tomorrow for another new episode of Two Chicks and a Crucifix.
That's right. We're going to talk about...
I don't know yet.
I know. Let me tell you.
Well, since it's my show, I don't know that you know or not.
I think it is my show. It's my show, isn't it?
Your show was yesterday, dear.
Just so y'all know, Kim knows how to read a calendar and Lark doesn't. Anyway.
My show is tomorrow and I haven't written it or recorded it yet. So, you know, we shall see.
Oh, God. Please join us tomorrow for another awesome episode of Two Chicks and a Crucifix. And then again on Friday for Forensic Friday. And then the next week. So thank you again, y'all, for being here. We love y'all. Bye.
Bye-bye, y'all.